All right, so I want to get started.
I
Rabbi
just,
Dan,
if
did
I
you have something
can,
you want to say?
just going to, for half a second, that was like the pre-shear shear. Okay, now we'll get started. But
Sure.
since you
That was just
mentioned
off the cuff. Yeah.
Nishmat, yeah, of course, that's the best part. But since you mentioned your Nishmat and Rav Henkin, I want to thank you and let people know that on March the 7th, that's a week from this Sunday, Chana Henkin, Rabbanit Chana Henkin, will be giving a shear on the Torah in Motion Zoom channel on her late husband, on the response of Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin. She'll be talking about his impact as one of the leading poskim in Israel for over 40 years. So that's on March the 7th. And I thank Lori because she made the, shidduch between me and Rabbanit Henkin, even though, to sort of, to put it into motion. So thank you very much. That'll be on March the 7th. We just posted it on the website, so you can go in and register when you get a moment. Okay, with that, Lori, back to Megillat Esther, and
Sure.
thank you very much. Now the real part of the show. That was the warm-up. Now we come to
All right.
the
I
okay.
will just quickly mention, just first of all, besimcha to make the connection, but Rabbanit Henkin, aside from being married to Rav Henkin, was perhaps aside from his son, Rav Eitam, Hashem Yikom Damo, who was killed in a terrorist attack, Rabbanit Henkin is probably Rav Henkin's closest student. It's as a wife, one doesn't necessarily present oneself that way, but she wasn't just married to Rav Henkin. She was really a student of Rav Henkin as well, and they learned tremendously together. So her insight into his halachic rulings is unparalleled. And I say that speaking as a student of Rav Henkin myself. Okay, all that being said, I'd like to get into today's shiur and the kind of overall question that I want to address. We started talking last week about the nature of the mitzvah of Megillah and starting talking about women's obligation in Megillah. And if there's an overarching question I want to be talking about today, it's which choices are correct, or how does one make the choices between the different, there's all the different Megillah reading options. This year, the choices, as we started to say, are even a little more complex with corona limitations thrown in. But sort of the interface between what we've learned so far and what we're going to learn tonight, delving deeper into the nature of woman's obligation in Megillah reading with the choices that are available for fulfilling the obligation, that's what I want to look at with you tonight. Okay, so I'm going to try to share the screen. Let's hope this goes well the first time. Okay, this is the Purim piece, and this is going to advance portion of the screen. Let's hope it works. Yay! I'm always so happy when technology works. Okay. And I promised last time that we were going to get started by looking at different possible explanations for a position that we discussed. We discussed how the Gemara, the Talmud Bavli, says that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says that women are obligated in Megillah as a function of Afhena Yubel Toanes, inclusion in the miracle. And we saw that the Talmud Bavli says that women are considered obligated in Megillah reading and fit to serve as readers. And then we saw that based on the Tosefta and a reading of the Yerushalmi, Bahag Halachot Gedolah, the Gaonic source, steps in and says, not so fast, women are obligated to hear Megillah, but not to read Megillah. And the question that we were sort of left with was, why should there be a distinction an obligation between men and women? Once we assert, or once we establish that women are obligated in Megillah reading, why should there be any difference? So to get started with this, I want to look at Lamar Cheshet. This is Rav Agis of, I think he's a Lithuanian, if I'm not mistaken. And he's an Achron, he's a later halachic authority. These are the ones who try to explain this position, the whys of it, tend to be later halachic authorities. And he suggests two possible reasons why women's obligation would be different. And they're both based on a common idea, which is that Megillah reading actually entails two distinct mitzvah fulfillments. So let's look at that. Mitba'er b'zeitev, data bahag, she'en nashim mechuyavot, rak b'shmiata megillah. So he says, I can explain with this, and we'll see what he's talking about, the position of the halachot gedolot, that women are only obligated in hearing the Megillah and not in reading the Megillah. Behainu, kevan de ikar chiyuvan hu mishum pirsum hanes, im kein, dai lahem bishmia levad, sheze have pirsum. Since women's fundamental obligation is from afhen hayu be'oto anis, inclusion in the miracle, he's saying that's connected to the function of the Megillah as publicizing the miracle. And to publicize the miracle in Megillah reading, you really just have to hear the Megillah. In other words, you want to be another, as it were, set of ears contributing to the masses that are becoming aware of this miracle. That's his claim. Masha'ein kein ha'anashim. But this is not so, he says, for the men. Milvat mitzvat pirsumanes chayvim gam kein b'mitzvat zechira. V'zehu chiyuv kriya. He says, men have an additional mitzvah fulfillment when it comes to reading Megillah, and that is remembering Amalek. I'm going to stop here for a second and just make note of something. I think we mentioned it last week, which is that there's actually a halachic debate about whether women are obligated in the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. There is a position represented, for example, by Sefer HaChinuch, that women are exempt. It seems that that's the position that's inspiring the Marcheshet. But there's also a position that women are obligated in the mitzvah of remembering Amalek. So if it were the case that women's obligation or that someone's obligation in Megillah is influenced in part by publicizing the miracle and in part by whether or not they're obligated also in remembering Amalek, there's good reason to say that women would be included in this picture, or at least as plausible an argument as the argument that women wouldn't be. But remember, Marcheshet is trying to basically just trying to give a possible explanation for why Bahag would say there's a difference. So this is one possible difference. Maybe the Megillah is also about remembering Amalek, and maybe remembering Amalek is exclusive to men, and therefore men would have to read and women wouldn't. Next possibility. Oda Sharli Lamar Betam HaBahag. She'en nashim motziot anashim v'fima de'ita b'gemara dad Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak de'mashum ha'che'en omrim halal b'purim mashum de'kriyata ha'inu hilila. Okay, he's saying perhaps women are not obligated the same as men and thus don't discharge men's obligations. We'll come back to that. Because reading the Megillah is a form of reciting halal. We don't say halal on Purim. We say halal on Hanukkah. We say halal on Yamim Tovim, but we don't say halal on Purim. And the answer to why, the Gemara gives a few different answers for why that should be the case, but one of the answers is, well, actually, we do say halal on Purim. It's in the form of reading the Megillah. By the way, this jabs very nicely. If you remember last time we talked about reading the Megillah by day and by night and how the proof texts for that, each of them were referring implicitly to the idea that the Megillah functions as a form of prayer. So this would be yet another sign that the Megillah is not just a liturgical reading, but also functions as a type of prayer for the community. In any case, generally speaking, women are exempt from the mitzvah of halal. Why? Well, we had a shiur on this, actually, if you might remember, because usually the mitzvah of halal is a positive time-bound commandment. Now, the truth is we could disagree with Marcheshet here as well, or we could bring those who disagree with Marcheshet here as well. Why? Because we also learned that there are different types of halal. The obligation in halal is rooted in different sorts of things. And one of the possible reasons for an obligation in halal is on the miracle track, that it's established to recognize a miracle. And that what halal is recited to recognize a miracle, that may well be the case that women are in fact obligated in halal. That's why there are those who say that women are obligated in halal on Hanukkah, and that's not just a voluntary recitation. If that's the case, then this claim also could be challenged, okay? But now, what we've seen is that Marcheshet has made two different suggestions for why women's obligation would be different from men's. Possibility number one, there's another element of fulfillment of a mitzvah in reading Megillah, and that's remembering Amalek. That would account for a difference if we follow the viewpoints that women are exempt from that mitzvah. Possibility number two, reading the Megillah can be a form of reciting Hallel. Women are often exempt from Hallel. Again, and therefore men would have a different level of obligation than women in Megillah. And so to hear that argument works if you follow the position that women are exempt from Hallel, and it works less well if you say that women can be obligated sometimes in Hallel, especially when it's established over a miracle. Now, this isn't the only possible explanation that's given for why there might be a difference. There's also this explanation given by Chavot Yair, שאבהנה היו באותו הניס, ואילב הייתיימה לא היו חייבים משום דנשים תירות ממצוות עשה שזמן גרמה. He says, look, women's obligation is rooted in אבהן היו באותו הניס. That's why women are obligated in Megillah. Otherwise, women would be exempt. If it were just a regular rabbinic mitzvah without a miracle publicizing aspect, he's saying, women would be exempt from it. דכיוון דהם חייבים מיתם בעלמא שאבהן היו באותו הניס, ואנשים מחויבים מלא תסור, כאין דאורייתא, אם כן, להכי אין מוציאות אנשים. He says, men are different. Men are obligated here as a straight. Ooh, someone's, Tova, you are annotating our text. You might not want to do that. I don't know if that's intentional. I suspect it's not. Okay. What he's saying is that men are obligated here as a straight function of a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Mitzvot d'rabbanan have Torah level backup because the Torah tells us that we shouldn't stray from what our sages said, lo tasur. So he's saying men are in that classic rabbinic obligation picture and women are not. And because women are not that in that picture and women's obligation is only because of Afhain, perhaps the obligation in Afhain is not on the same level as the obligation in a straight Drabbanan. That's possibility number two. One more possibility I want to share, and this is brought by Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Okay, ooh, this is a little frustrating because I see that this scribble is not leaving the page. I wanted to see if there's a way here, clear all drawings. Okay, success. So another possibility is that, is what Rav Soloveitchik raises, that he also says there are two different mitzvah fulfillments in reading the Megillah, but he's not saying about Hallel or Zechirat Amalek, he's talking about learning Torah. שבקריאת המגילה יש שני קיומים, תלמוד תורה, דקריאת כתבי הקודש, ופרסום הנס. There's an aspect of public Torah reading from the scripture, and that's something from which women would be exempt. And there's an aspect of publicizing the miracle, in which women are obligated. אנשים חייבים בשני הקיומים, נשים חייבות רק מטעם קיום המצווה של פרסום הנס. Men would be obligated only one, men would be obligated in both. Women would be obligated in only one, and perhaps for that reason, they would have different levels of obligation. Now, we always, when we see that a lot of very different explanations are given for the same phenomenon, we know that none of these answers are certain, right? The common thread to all of these responses is that the best bet of understanding why women would be only obligated to hear and not also to read is to say that there's something extra that the men need to do mitzvah-wise when they're hearing Megillah that women don't need to do. And then these are all different, these are different attempts to understand it, or to just say, like Chavasyar, Afhain is never the same as a straight obligation to Rabbanan. But none of this is, honestly, none of this is conclusive. And the truth of the matter is that it doesn't appear in the early commentators. There's a lot of discussion of the perspective of the halachot gedolot, and not a lot of discussion among the early authorities about why he would say that, other than harmonizing the texts and how he's harmonizing the different texts. So these are possible explanations, but none of them is really definitive. Okay, if we're working with a picture under which women's obligation is in fact distinct from men's, and it's to hear rather than to read, we need to think a little bit about the bracha. The brachas that we say on Megillah, remember we say three brachas before Megillah reading. So Shachianu, we talked about last time, we're used to Shachianu. She'asa Nisim, which relates to Pirsum Anes, this is also unaffected. But the first bracha that we recite on Megillah reading, generally speaking, is Al Mikra Megillah, on the reading of the Megillah. Now, if women's obligation is to hear and not to read, then one can ask whether women should actually be reciting a different bracha. Now, generally speaking, this isn't always relevant. If a woman's going to a shul minyan, no one is with a male reader for the community as a whole, no one is saying that she can't discharge her obligation by hearing his bracha and saying amen. It's pretty standard. The question is more, well, there's a reading just for women by a man who has already discharged his obligations, or by a woman, whether or not she's discharged obligations, or a woman's reading for herself. In those cases where the person, the people for whom Megillah is being read, where the obligation might only be hearing, the question becomes if that should affect the bracha. And the one who says it should, most prominently, is Ravia. Ravia is early halachic authority from Ashkenaz, and he says, Nir Eli, denashim nevarchot al mishma Megillah. He thinks that women should actually recite a different bracha on hearing the Megillah. Afilu ikaru la latzman, even if the woman is in fact reading it. A woman is reading Megillah for herself, says Ravia. Even in that case, if we understand halacha like Bahag, like halacha Kedola, that our obligation is to hear, then a woman reading Megillah for himself, as far as he's concerned, should be reciting Al Mishma Megillah. And this position gets picked up, notably, by Ruma. Ruma says, Yesh omrim, im haisha kor'a la'atzma mevarechet lishmoa Megillah, she'ena chayevet bikriya. There are those who say that if a woman's reading for herself, and we could extend that to any reading done specifically for women, that the bracha should be lishmoa Megillah. For a woman is not obligated in Kriya. Now, what's tricky here is he says yesh omrim. There are those who say. So it's not crystal clear if Rama is endorsing this perspective or not. What is important to note is that the Shulchan Aruch Mechaber, who comes before his comment, didn't make note of a distinct bracha. The indications are that the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch, did not view a woman hearing Megillah or reading Megillah as needing to make a distinct bracha. That also, by the way, might indicate something about his position regarding the Bahag. It might not. But Ruma is bringing it up. That becomes important halacha lama'aseh. There are different views about whether this should or should not be the case. Magen Avram says, Lishmoa Megillah. Mishnah Brura says, Lishmoa, this one's interesting, Lishmoa Mikra Megillah. By the way, did you notice that the version of what this bracha would be seems to keep changing? It's pretty striking. Generally speaking, we try not to make brachot that have not already been established by our sages. This is a case where, you know, you have in medieval Ashkenaz, this bracha is being, the possibility of this other bracha is being raised, which doesn't show up in the Talmud or in the Midrash Halacha or in the Talmud Yerushalmi or in the Tosefta. It doesn't appear in any of these places. And what's really striking in terms of how widely was this said is that we saw the Ravio who suggested says Al Mishma Megillah, Magen Avram says Lishmoa Megillah, and Mishnah Berurah says Lishmoa Mikra Megillah. Its wording is not stable, which perhaps indicates something about how common it was for it to be said or how firmly it was felt to be said. Now, there are modern halachic authorities who say that this, in fact, is what a woman should say. For example, Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, Mevarechet Lishmoa Megillah, Mivnei She'ena Chayevet Bekriya. Woman, he says, absolutely should be saying Lishmoa Megillah. Not everybody agrees with this perspective. Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who ultimately says that a woman reading for herself, i.e. the precise situation of Ramah, should say Lishmoa Megillah, brings a lot of different reasons why he's really not in favor of saying this is a bracha. Frankly, if a woman can discharge her obligation in hearing Megillah, generally speaking, by hearing the reader say Al Mikra Megillah, why should it really be different if she's reading for herself? Why should we take the chance of changing a bracha? Not only that, we don't even know for sure that Halacha Kedolot is right. There are different viewpoints about the level and the nature of women's obligation. That's not crystal clear either. And furthermore, certainly for Ashkenazi women, the custom is that Ashkenazi women recite brachot a mitzvot even when there's no obligation. So why should there be a problem with them reciting this mitzvah? In practice, Sephardi women on the whole, from my understanding is if there's Megillah reading just for Sephardi women, would recite or hear the usual bracha of Al Mikra Megillah. With Ashkenazi women, it's really debated because Mishnah Berurah, because Rama brings it as a possibility, and because Mishnah Berurah in particular cites it and says that that's what to do. There are communities in which a reading for women will say Al Mishma Megillah. But it's important to know that there's also viewpoints that say otherwise. For example, Pri Chadash says otherwise. There are other viewpoints as well. So with Ashkenazi women, it really varies what's done. Another thing that's just kind of an interesting point is the question of, well, in this scenario, a scenario where, let's say, a man who's already discharged his obligation is reading for women, or a woman is reading for a group of women, who should be making the bracha? It's actually not crystal clear if you think about it. Who should be making the bracha? Now, in shul, sure, it's fairly common for people to hear the bracha for the one who's reading. The truth of the matter is that that's discussed as well, okay? And if someone, let's say in the case where someone has their own Megillah, their own kosher Megillah, and they're reading along with the public reader, especially in those cases, we say that they can make their own bracha. But what about in general? This one is actually really, really not clear what should be done. Regarding shofar blowing, the Beit Yosef says as follows. Truman Adeshin says that someone who's already discharged his obligation in blowing shofar, and he's coming to blow for somebody else, that really the core halacha is that the person who's blowing again to help someone else discharge their obligation shouldn't be reciting the bracha. Really, it's the person who's discharging their obligation now should be reciting the bracha. But this is not what's practiced. In other words, what he's saying is fundamentally, yeah, the people who are hearing it are the ones who should be reciting it, not the person who's already discharged the obligation and is saying it again. And yet, it's not common practice. Well, there's debate about this as well. In the case of shofar, I should just say as a side note, the case of shofar and the bracha for women and shofar is a little bit distinct. It's distinct because that's a case where women are doing voluntary mitzvah observance and not out of an obligation. This case of Megillah, women are fully obligated in it. Rabbi Chil Michal Tekachinsky says, "Imoshemu bevet haKnesset, the korei lifnehem ish shekvar shama Megillah tevarech achat mehen agimah brachot." Rav Tekachinsky says that in fact one woman should recite the brachot for all the women present. Minchat Yitzchak, it's actually interesting. There's another position that each woman should recite it individually. If you look in the halachic literature, each possibility is attested. There are voices who will say, yeah, the man recites the bracha, and then they get back and forth again with what bracha he should recite. There are voices that say each woman should recite her own bracha in this case. And there are voices who say one woman recites the bracha for all the women present. This last position that one woman recites the bracha for all women present was endorsed by Rav David Auerbach, who is the nephew of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and compiled a very fine book about women in halacha called Halichot Beita. And he, this position of Rav Tukachinsky, and he endorsed this position because on the one hand, like we just saw, the fundamental halacha, even if it's not widely practiced, is that the person who's already discharged the obligation shouldn't be the one saying the bracha. The person currently discharging the obligation should. And then additionally, we have the idea of Echad Mvarech L'chulam, that one person recites the bracha for a whole group when they're fulfilling a mitzvah together. And if you understand women as being subject to that idea, then it's fully appropriate for one woman to recite the bracha for a group of women. Okay, next question. You have a group of women. Is it considered to be a full-fledged quorum? And the halachic practical outcomes of that are twofold. One is going to be the final bracha. There's a position that the final bracha, according to the Talmud, is recited out of custom. It's not obligatory like the first bracha. It's customary. So the final bracha is recited out of custom. And there's a position that it's recited specifically where there is a minyan. Okay, that's very customary. And yet, there's also viewpoint, Arachat Shulchan says, for example, that in fact, even when an individual is reading, a final bracha could be recited. So that's going to be another practical halachic difference. Now, what are the positions on women counting? I think last time I mentioned that the Kolbo also is this Provence medieval Provence, he says, "Ein ro'i lashlim ben asara, d'chol makom shitzricho asara anashim ba'inan." Nope, women can't combine with men to form a minion, and presumably women couldn't form their own minion because it has to be a minion, not just a quorum. Sefer HaItter, however, says something different. Sefer HaItter says that ki heichi denashi mezamnot ve'ein mitzterfot lebirkat hamazon, hachinami ein mitzterfot lechachila. Sefer HaItter says something that harkens back to our last topic together, Zimun. He says, look, just like women can recite their own Zimun, but don't combine with men to form a Zimun, so too, women should not combine with men to form a quorum for Megillah reading. That's a very interesting position, because on the one hand, it would say that, let's say you have three men and seven men, three women. The Sefer HaItter is not in favor of considering that a minion. On the other hand, it's very much leaving open the possibility that if you had a group of 10 women, he might consider it a minion, the same way that he recognizes in his parallel example in Zimun, that women, a group of women, can form a quorum for Zimun. Okay, the Ritva actually goes farther. The Ritva says, no, women and men can combine. Remember, the Ritva was particularly concerned about men and women combining for Zimun because he thought there were modesty issues. Why people drink at meals, things can get perhaps inappropriate, but more than that, and this was what we really talked about when we learned about Zimun itself, the nature of Zimun is to discuss or even celebrate the fact that the people who are forming the Zimun are eating together. It would be almost like ritually celebrating men and women mixing, which is perhaps a step too far. But the Ritva says that this is different. Whereas with Zimun, men and women combining changes the fundamental nature of their Panamazon. Here, men and women combining for a quorum doesn't change anything about how you're reading the Megillah. The lo b'verchotei ben yachid la'sarat doesn't change the obligatory brachos. It's not really considered combining on the level like Zimun was, that we'd be concerned for immodesty. So fundamentally, Ritva is saying women could combine with men to form a minion, and presumably, he's saying women could form their own quorum for Megillah reading as well. Again, from the analogy to Zimun. Okay, now, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't give anything conclusive about this, but the Rama says, Yeshli stapekim nashim mitzterfot la'asara. Rama says, we should question, or there's a doubt about whether women combine with men to form 10. Even Rama is actually leaving it open whether women on their own could create or constitute a quorum for 10. And some modern halachic authorities, including again Tzitz Eliezer, and including Rav Avadya Yosef, rule that, in fact, a women's group getting together can count to the extent that, in fact, they would recite the final bracha afterwards. De kavanat harama, hi rak le'inyanim yecholot litzteref la'asara yachad im anashim. Rama's concern is specifically about women joining with men. O she'enan mitzterfot dumia bezimun, or not joining, specific to Zimun. By the way, it's not saying that men and women can't participate in the same Megillah reading. He's saying, could we count them together towards a 10 quorum? Aval, she'yikra'u v'yitzterfu la'atzman, chule'ama modu she'yicholot. But that women should be able to read, we'll talk about that in a minute, and combine on their own, everybody agrees that women can. Saying even from the outset, women can gather together for Megillah reading, just women reading for other women, and reciting the brachot. And he does not seem to distinguish between the different brachot. And Rav Avadya Yosef makes a very similar ruling. So this is really, there's back and forth about this issue. And there are those who are careful that if it's a group of only women, that they don't recite the final bracha. But there are these very strong halachic authorities to rely on, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Avadya Yosef, that a women's Megillah reading can in fact have the final bracha after it. Okay, well, what about a woman reading for herself? Now, this would seem to be pretty straightforward. The Bach suggests that women have a different level of obligation from men, that a woman has the same level of obligation for herself. Usually, if you're obligated in mitzvah, you can perform it. Not only can you perform it, it's usually considered to be preferred. Mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. It's preferred for an individual to perform a mitzvah rather than some kind of agent, some other person. But there's this kind of funny thing that happens in the Zohar. The Zohar says, "Mechuyavot b'mikra Megillah lishmoa mipi akore." Women are obligated when it comes to Megillah reading to hear the Megillah from the reader. The suggestion in the Zohar is that women should not be reading. Now, the Zohar doesn't jibe well with the Gemara. You'll remember that when we saw the Talmud Bavli last time, we talked about how the Talmud said that women are fit to read the Megillah, and that those who followed the position of Halachot Gedolot said women are fit to read the Megillah means that women are fit to read the Megillah for women. It would be very hard to say that women are fit to read the Megillah for women and exclude the possibility of a woman reading Megillah for herself. And that's something like what the Rosh says. D'lo tema af nashim einan yotzot ela b'kriya chashuva shel anashim. We should not say that a woman is only going to discharge her obligation by hearing a man reading. We would think that that would be the end of that. Zohar suggests one thing. It's not crystal clear. The Rama says also, remember this, we just saw it a minute ago. The Rama talks about the case where a woman's reading for herself, and he's saying that in that case, a woman makes such and such a bracha. He doesn't suggest at all that there's any problem with her reading for herself. That the trouble starts with Magen Avram. Magen Avram is worried about the Zohar. He says, B'midrash ha'ne'alam rut, that's another term for referring to this part of the Zohar, K'tiv is written, D'lo tikra la'atzma rak tishma manashim. She shouldn't read for herself. She should only hear from men. Now, you'll remember it didn't explicitly say that in the Zohar. It said she should hear it from the reader. It wasn't crystal clear what the Zohar meant. But the Magen Avraham understands the Zohar this way. It's a plausible reading of the Zohar. There are those who rule this way. The Chaye Adam, for example, and Mishnah Berurah quotes it, rules that preferably a woman should hear Megillah for a man. At the same time, it's widely acknowledged that this is not a completely clear argument, to the extent that the Chaye Adam himself admits that in a case where a woman would be in a pressing situation, she certainly could read it for herself, since the language of the Zohar, he himself writes, and he's the one poskening like the Zohar, eino muchrach. It's not 100% clear. We're not forced into that reading. So it's important to know there is a position out there that a woman should not read Megillah for herself. It's brought in Magen Avram. It is not agreed upon by everybody. Mishnah Berurah, however, does cite it and prefers for a woman not to read for herself if she has another choice. The other thing that comes up is woman reading for others. Okay, what about a woman reading for others? Rashi says, Chayavot b'mikra Megillah u'ksherot likrota lotzi zcharim yidei chovatam. Rashi, who views a woman's obligation as comparable to a man's obligation, says that women can, in fact, discharge men's obligations. Rambam seems to imply the same thing. Kriyat Megillah bizmana mitvat aseh. Hakol chayavim b'kriyata, anashim v'nashim. Echad hakore, echad hashomea min hakore, yatza yidei chovato, v'hu ishi yishma mimishu chayav b'kriyata. Rambam says women are fully obligated. He says whether a man or a woman, they're obligated, i.e. he makes it sound like it's the same obligation. And then he says that where does the reader have to be? You have to hear it from someone who's obligated in reading. He said women are obligated. He said you got to hear the Megillah from someone who's obligated in reading. A simple reading of Rambam and Rashi is that a woman could read for anybody, including men. The Shulchan Aruch is a little less clear. He says, in other words, he quotes Rambam, but then he adds, there are those who say that a woman does not discharge a man's obligation. And here we have a real question, and I don't know what the answer is. Generally speaking, when the Shulchan Aruch brings a halacha, and then afterwards he says, It means that he's ruling like the first view. It's not crystal clear here how he's ruling. It's not 100% certain. And it's also not certain what he means when he's saying that a woman can't discharge a man's obligation, according to at least some opinions. Is he intending to refer to the position of the halachot gedolot, according to which women and men have a different obligation? And if the levels of obligation are distinct, therefore a woman cannot discharge a man's obligation? Or is he referring to some other factor that would mean that women shouldn't or couldn't discharge a man's obligation? I.e., maybe difference in obligation is not the determinative factor here. Maybe there's something else that's involved. What something else might be involved? A few different possibilities. It might be a concern about women discharging obligations for the masses in public. The Gaonim say this. Isha mechuyevet mikra megillah v'lo totziyat aramim. Say, a woman's fully obligated, but she shouldn't discharge the masses' obligations. The Ran says, ein ze mechuvar. The Bahag's position, Halacha Gadolot's position, saying women and men have a different level of obligation, is not clear. But we should be stringent about his position. Okay, so another possibility is maybe even if we're not certain about the Bahag's position, maybe we should be concerned for it. The Tosfot and Sukkah bring up a concern that this might be something called Zila Bahu Milta. It might be considered somehow undignified for men to discharge their obligation through a woman's reading. Exactly what that means and the parameters for that are not totally clear. Another possibility that's been brought up is kol isha. Maybe kol isha is a problem. Another possibility that's been brought up is kvod tzibur, which we hear in discussions of Torah reading. So it could be that there are all these ancillary reasons that get in the way. The Yalkut Yosef is fairly representative when he rules the following way. Mikol makom, nachon lachush l'dat ha-machmirim l'chachila lo totzi ha-isha et ha-ish yidei chova, elem kein b'shat ha-tchak. It's appropriate to be concerned for the position that a woman cannot fulfill a man's obligation Megillah, except for a pressing situation. That's actually something that potentially could be very relevant this year. This year, there could be families who, for whatever reason, are not going to be able to go to a live Megillah reading related to COVID, but where the competent reader in the family is a female. There could be situations this year, in other words, that fall into the Shahat Hadchak, a pressing circumstance under which a woman might actually be reading for a man, and that would be considered acceptable. It's the sort of thing to ask one's local Orthodox rabbi about, but it's something that's plausible. The last thing we have to talk about, and then we'll try to put all the pieces together, has to do with women reading for other men. For other women. Here it would seem pretty clear that the limitation is specifically on women reading for men and not on women reading for men, for women. We saw two reasons why that might be the case. One, perhaps the consideration is that women have a different level of obligation for men. Women have the same level of obligation as other women. Two, perhaps there's some ancillary reason, something like zila milta, something being undignified about a woman discharging men's obligations. Kolisha, it's likely not to apply. Those things are not the same in a community of women. Tosfot Arosh says this explicitly, zila milta be'anashim shiotziyum nashim. This issue of lack of dignity is specifically a woman discharging men's obligations. The implication is that a woman discharging women's obligations is fine. But there's a commentary on the Rosh, Korban Netanel, who apparently did not have this version of the Rosh's Tosfot, who makes a suggestion that actually, ein isha motzia nashim rabot yidei chovatan, mishum dezila bihu milta. He thinks, in fact, that a woman can't discharge women's obligations because it would be undignified. No less in authority than Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. The truth is Rav Henkin says something parallel, calls this Korban Netanel into question, and he says that what he wrote, what the Tosfot wrote there is about men, but a woman certainly, Nashima Cherot Shapir Motzia, a woman can certainly discharge other women's obligations. Okay, so let's put all the pieces together about what we've seen. And we're returning to our overarching question, which has to do, you know, with considering different options, how to assess them, okay? Especially for women with different options, you know, a home-based Megillah reading, man reading for women, the Big Shul reading, a woman reading for other women. How do we put the pieces together? Could the woman read it for a man? Okay. So as we saw, women are definitely obligated to hear Megillah. So that means, for example, this year with COVID, the fact that it's difficult, there's no issue of priority here in terms of who gets to hear it. It is as important for a woman to hear Megillah from a kosher Megillah read as it is for a man to hear Megillah read from a kosher Megillah. Okay. It is a priority for every Jew over the age of Bar Bat Mitzvah to be able to hear a Megillah reading this year. How we're going to accomplish that is its own challenge, but that's not a distinction. There's a question about whether or not women are obligated in reading Megillah, and therefore, for that reason, that possibility, and also because there might be some other ancillary reasons, women generally do not read Megillah for men except for pressing situations. What about other options for women hearing Megillah? What is the advantage of a woman hearing Megillah in, let's say, a Big Shul reading? It's the same advantage as anyone hearing Megillah in a Big Shul reading. We want there to be maximal persume nisa, publicizing of the miracle. And we also have an idea of what we call Barov Am Hadrat Melech, that it's in the masses that we glorify the king. We want all to be a part of that. As Rav Henkin says, all other things being equal, that's a preference if we could have everyone together. But, you know, as he also says, all other things are not necessarily equal. In many communities, if not all communities, there's more than one Megillah reading offered in the community. And the reason for that is because, especially when children are involved, but also because the timing isn't congenial for everybody, or there can be other responsibilities that someone has. We need to have more possibilities for people to discharge our obligations. It's certainly true this year that we're going to have multiple Megillah readings. Once you have multiple Megillah readings, is there preference for women to hear from a man? Well, if we are concerned for the position of the Zohar cited by Magen Avraham and Mishnah Berurah, or that a woman shouldn't read Megillah for herself, or if we're concerned from the position of Korban Netano, that there's a problem with a woman reading for a group of other women, then the preference would be for a woman to hear Megillah from a man. There are those who would also say that that's also a Barov Am Hadrat Melech consideration. If you're going to have an additional reading at the shul, why not have a man read it so that everyone, men or women, could attend that reading and not just women? So those are all real considerations. And at the same time, we just saw Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said there's no problem with a woman discharging the obligations of other women. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is not a nobody. He's not the only one. He's effectively saying that we don't have to paskin like Zohar or like Korban Netano. In that case, there's a lot more room, certainly when we're talking about there being multiple Megillah readings in a community to start with, for a woman to read the Megillah for other women. And if there's a high level reading available, that would be fine. So you have you still have some reservations, but you also have some openness to it. The first place where women's Megillah readings for women really took off was in Midrashot, in like seminaries. And that's because those are kind of organic communities of women. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein permitted Megillah readings in Megillos in Lindenbaum for that reason. And at the same time, there are an increasing number of communities that are offering readings for women by women, even in a mixed community, not just in some all women's institution. And Rav Henkin explains this pretty well. It's often impossible to hear properly from the Ezrat Nashim. The inaudibility of even one word from the Megillah reading means that the listener has not fulfilled her obligation. Two, women, particularly mothers, are often unable to come to the synagogue at the specific time. So there's a widespread practice to have a second Megillah reading for women. And in such circumstances, it's entirely proper for a woman or women to read the Megillah. So what he's saying is that once you've got multiple readings, in particular when they're catering especially to women, which is often the case, then it's completely legitimate for a woman to read them again, following the position, which not everyone agrees to, that a woman can read Megillah for herself and for other women. This remains controversial, and it's interesting that it remains controversial. It part of it really does have to do with this ideal of Barov Am Hadrat Melech and this concern that about women kind of breaking off and forming their own community. Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, in a message that he wrote to graduates, rabbinic alums of Yeshivat Har Etzion, made a really interesting argument, I thought, about Beruvam Hadrat Melech, which I'm bringing here with his permission, that when a community sponsors a women's Megillah reading by women, that's not necessarily something that detracts from Beruvam Hadrat Melech. In other words, you could say that when someone makes their own split off reading for a small subgroup, that's one thing. But when a shul is actually sponsoring, he wants to argue that when a shul is actually sponsoring multiple Megillah readings, and one of them is a woman reading for other women, those multiple readings are all kind of viewed as part of the broader shul's community's Beruvam. Especially when you can't have everybody all together for logistical reasons and for reasons that otherwise they're not all going to be able to hear, he's saying that that should be a consideration. He adds another thought. He actually cites Benot Tzlofchad. He says, allowing the group to express itself before God in a manner that's halachically appropriate is the right thing to do for their Avodat Hashem. These women sincerely desire to be Avodat Hashem and should be allowed the channels to do so. The daughters of Tzlofchad speak right. There's so many avenues of worship that are cordoned off to sincere halachic women. It's crucial to allow those that can be allowed. He's saying something else. And what he's saying is, this isn't just an ordinary situation. This is a situation where there's a strong halachic argument to be made in favor of a woman performing a liturgical leadership role. And he's saying, given how much of a source of, how complicated this can be, for even very, very sincere, very traditional women, this is a possibility that when women seek it, we should try to make available, because we don't have a lot of possibilities to make this available. And we should seize those opportunities when we have them. Not everyone agrees with this, and it's legitimate not to agree with it. One can be concerned for the Zohar and Korban Netanel. One can be concerned about communal unity. One could be concerned about, there's a lot of questions about where will this lead, et cetera, et cetera. And at the same time, there's something very powerful about what he's saying. He's saying, you know, this is about this, from his perspective, this is a case of permitting the permitted. And sometimes it's really important to make sure that we can permit the permitted. That's ultimately what he's trying to say. There's one last thing that I want to raise, and then I'll go into questions. Let me stop sharing. And it's just something interesting, I think, in particular, that comes up with women's Megillah readings. I think it's not just that it's a unique liturgical opportunity for women to read. I mean, the truth of the matter is, let's think about it. In a big women's Megillah reading, how many women are actually reading? If they split up the reading, so maybe it's 10. Sometimes they really, really split it up and it's more than 10. The truth is, splitting up a reading, there's a little bit of a debate about if a reading should be split up, if it's ideal. Important note, if someone is splitting up a Megillah reading, it's critical for all readers to hear the brachot and to hear the entire reading. It's not okay if you're splitting up a Megillah reading for one reader to kind of be going over their thing while the reading's going on. That's part of what creates the halachic entity of it being considered one continuous reading. That being said, look, we have this history that we saw when we first started learning. We saw this last week, the Yerushalmi, that Rav Yehoshua ben Levi would go home and he'd read just for the women in the family and for the members of his household. There's a lot of communities historically where women didn't get to go to shul at all. There's a possibility that women getting together to read is really considered to be a quorum, and that's supported by the Tzitz Eliezer, and that's supported by Rav Avadya Yosef. And there's really a very strong halachic argument to be made for women to be able to read Megillah for each other. And there's this other aspect, which is Afhena Yuba Otoanes is understood as being related as well, not just to women being subject to Haman's plot and redeemed, but also to Esther herself and her centrality in the miracle. I think that one of the reasons, it's something that I've seen again and again, I've heard again and again from women, again, because they're not all reading the Megillah, at the women's Megillah reading. Why is it so important to them? Part of it is even seeing other women take this liturgical opportunity and run with it. But part of it is that it's a woman's story. It's a woman's story. It's our people's story, but it's also a woman being central to our people's story. And that's something that I think really resonates with women getting together around. There's a sense, I think a big part of the appeal of women's Megillah readings is a sense that women are coming together in joy to celebrate this narrative where a woman's at the center. And like I said, it's not something that they're inventing. The Rashbam's position on Afhena Yubo Tornes is that women's obligation in Megillah derives from inclusion in the miracle, and inclusion in the miracle is about Esther's centrality to the story, that there is this idea of a special connection between the community of women and Esther herself. And I think that's a big part of the appeal. And it's really, really important from my perspective that people know what their options are. In other words, obviously I'm not making rulings for a community and every community needs to have their own halachic guidance. But I think it's really important for there to be a lot of options for people. And there are the women who really want to be part of a shul reading should still be taking care to make sure as much as possible that the Megillah reading is audible from the women's section, and that there's room for women even right now with Corona. And that's really important. And there are women who aren't going to make it to shul, and there's a long historical precedent for women going to small private readings, and that's great too. And then there's this newer thing. And this newer thing has a lot of backing. And for some women, it's become a spiritual high point to their year. And when we can recognize that, again, it is there's some debate about it, and the debate is legitimate. But when we can recognize that, it can be really important. There's even increasing ones. There's young women who do bat mitzvahs. Megillah reading, a great idea. It's an authentic opportunity for the fact that a woman's not obligated in mitzvot to make a difference from other people's mitzvah observance. I want to add that this year, where I live in Efrat, because of the government constraints on how many people can gather, I know of a few cases where there are women who are immunocompromised, and the fact that there are women in the community who know how to read Megillah is helping making it possible for them to hear Megillah, because the men in the community are oversubscribed this year, trying to multiply minions to make sure that there's enough possible. And that's having the skills as well is not something to, it's something to take seriously. You connect with the text in a different level when you develop those skills. Okay, so now what I'm gonna do is go through the questions. I wanna thank you all for being here. I apologize again for last week, but I'm so glad to be back and for things to seem to be working. I'm gonna go through the questions that are here. I miss Rabbi Jay because it's always fun when he goes through the questions, but I can read the chat myself, so we'll see how we do. Was there a new source sheet for today? So Rabbi Jay had some problems posting it. That link that I put at the top of the chat includes the sources and an in-depth article about it on the website I direct, derachaya.org. So you can go there and you can find what we discussed and more.
Can you just post it again?
Okay. How does hearing the Megillah satisfy?
Could you just post it again?
Absolutely. No problem.
Hold Thank on. You.
I'm using my copy-pasting skills. And here it is. Hooray. Okay. How does the hearing the Megillah satisfy the mitzvah of remembering Abba Lake? Does it mirify your mitzvah? It's an excellent question. The answer is no. This is also why this argument is not super, super strong, Zev. The truth of the matter is that we don't generally hold that the way you fulfill the mitzvah of Zechirat Amalek is by hearing the Megillah. You remember from last week, we were talking about that if you miss it, so you can make it up with the Torah reading on Purim, which talks about Amalek, not from the Megillah reading. The claim is that the Megillah reading, what the Mar Cheshit is claiming is that the Megillah reading is an additional fulfillment of the mitzvah, but not an obligation, but it's not actually the strongest argument. There's something to it. There is the connection of Zachor, Zechira, Nizkarim, the Nasim, Amalek, and Amalek. And yet it's one of the weaker parts of the argument that he advances. What is the connection between Haman and Amalek? Haman was Persian. It's unlikely that Agag, the king of Amalek, is linked to Haman Agagi. So the name Agag is certainly suggestive, and that's how our sages really understood it. And the truth of the matter is that the Amaleki, if you look into it in Tanakh, Amalek is actually a much more complicated name than you might think. They keep showing up even after we think that we've decimated them. I think it's something similar, like when we talk, let's say, about the Bedouin or something like that, we talk about it like it's one small group, but actually there are different tribes and it's not all one thing. It would appear that there's more than one group that's referred to as Amalek. They might have common ancestry and shared I would call them values, but I guess the Torah thinks it's worse than values, right? Shared terrible values. But it's not just one thing. So is it possible? I don't see why not. Also remember that the Persian Empire is a cosmopolitan empire, right? 127 provinces reaching far and wide. So the fact that one person could be descended from a unique people and be part of that empire is completely plausible. In fact, even in the Talmud Bavli, we have a story of a Ger Amaleki coming up, and there's discussion about whether or not it can count. So it is possible. I personally don't doubt it. I'm in my own naive sense. I think Haman is descended from Amalek. My own thoughts are not conclusive, that I think our sages saying should be important. Did Ravia institute a new bracha? Is he authorized to do so? It's a great question. It's fascinating that this bracha shows up. It makes sense that the bracha shows up. I mean, what's going on? The Rishonim in Ashkenaz are saying, well, if women have a different obligation, that needs to be reflected in the bracha. It's great because they're taking seriously the idea of the halachah gedolot, and they're trying to see how it would be reflected in women's mitzvah performance. It's a function of really thinking through in a very practical way how women are optimally observing the mitzvah. And at the same time, the question of whether one is authorized to come up with a new bracha is a really good one. Not so clear. One case that we have in our daily lives that women have is Shasani Kirtzono. That's a bracha that doesn't show up in the Talmud. It shows up later, and it's somehow been widely adopted. So it's not impossible for this to happen, but it's highly irregular and unusual. And like I said, when we looked at the different versions of people, even those who agree that women should be reciting a different bracha here, can't seem to agree on what exactly the wording of that bracha is. Which makes it a little more difficult. I think that's one of the reasons. What I've been hearing, kind of facts on the ground, is that in increasing situations, it's more and more that the bracha of Amikra Megillah is what's being recited. Again, Rav Sternbuch's argument is a very powerful one, which is that women would likely recite a bracha on mitzvah performance even when it's voluntary. And here there is an obligation. And additionally, a woman hearing a shul reading would be discharging through saying amen to Al Mikra Megillah. So there's a really good argument to be made to stick with the traditional one. And yet Rama brings it, and it's a question. And this is a psak that's out there. And there are, I think I was just seeing Rav Rimon. I think Rav Rimon said that that's what women should say on women's Megillah reading. So, you know, it's still out there as a viable position, even though it is very highly irregular. If a man is reading for a group of women, does he also make the concluding bracha of Haravat Rivenu? So this goes back to what we were talking about before. Who's making these brachas? Haravat Rivenu is an even more unusual case, even though it's kind of, we're used to the reader reciting all the brachas, including Haravat Rivenu, the final bracha after the Megillah reading. As I mentioned, Haravat Rivenu is recited out of custom. It's not obligatory. And here's the other interesting thing. It starts with Baruch Atah Hashem. That's interesting because it suggests that it's not a continuation of the Megillah reading that just happened, in which case we wouldn't necessarily start with the Baruch Atah Hashem formula, but rather it's almost like an independent bracha of praise of God. In which case, it's not necessarily strictly rooted in the Megillah, so there would be more leeway for who would recite it. It would seem to me pretty clear that if a woman is reciting the brachas before the Megillah reading for a group of women, that if they're following the ruling that they do say Haravat Rivenu, that she would do that for Haravat Rivenu as well. That's even with a male reader. But again, there's a lot of different customs out there, and there's good backing for a wide range of practice in this. Does Tzitz Eliezer indeed rule that women could read for other women? He writes that 10 women can gather and hear the reading. If you look back at the source, he says, let me just get it open. I'm not going to share it again because I'm worried that's going to go awry. Just give me a second and let me find it and quote it to you. Tzitz Eliezer. Not that one. Here. I'm gonna let me pull this and put it in the chat. Okay, this is the source we were looking at. Wait. Hinei ledati pashut sheyecholim. Yes, I think you're right that in this case, he's not a, here. Aval she yikre uvi yitzterfula atzman chule alma modu she yicholot. Okay, so he's saying the problem is that they're not mitzterfo like in Zimun, but that they should, and he uses the word read, that they should read and combine for a quorum for themselves. Themselves here is in the feminine, meaning women. Chole alma modu she yicholot. Everyone acknowledges that they can. So it sounds to me that he's saying that women could also read. That seems to me what he means when he says that women would read and could read and could confine to form a quorum. But your point is well taken. It's a really good question. Why is it a good question? Because, you know, let's say Rav Avadya Yosef, he talks about how you could have haravit rivenu for women getting together in a reading. But he clearly thinks that the basic situation is a man reading for a group of women. And I'm certain that generally speaking is what Tzitz Eliezer has in mind practically as well. Okay. And at the same time, he leaves the room and is ruling for women to read. So I don't think they have in mind specifically that women are going ahead and reading for themselves, but I think they're opening the door to it, as it were. Okay. Let's see where we are. Do we ever paskin by the Zohar? Yeah. It's, you know, it's a funny, inconsistent thing when and how the Zohar or mystic teachings in general find their way in halacha, but they do. Sometimes, and it's sort of complicated. So it's not an always thing. It's a sometimes thing. I don't think there's a clear rule to it about when that happens and when it doesn't happen. Magen Avram picking something up is important. Other people not picking it up or reading things differently is also important. It's not the case that every time the Zohar says something, that is the beginning and end of a halachic discussion. There are plenty of things that the Zohar says they're not considered to be la halacha. But sometimes the Zohar does influence halacha. So it's not something to completely dismiss. I believe there are a number of halacha in Shulchan Aruch pursuant to which Rav Yosef Karo paskins in accordance with the Zohar, such as wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay. How do the shita that the obligation of women is on a lower level than men reconcile this with Afhena Yubel Toanis? This is what we saw in Chavot Yair, which is an idea that afhen hayu be'oto anes is not cannot obligate women on the same level as a straight obligation for men, either because it's on somehow a lower level than a regular derabanan, which is enforced by lo tasur, or there are those who talk about a different level of ruach hakodesh because it's coming straight from the Megillah text itself, or it's divrei Kabbalah. There are different ways to formulate it, but they all come back to some idea that afhen hayu be'oto anes creates an obligation, but not the same level of obligation. Not everyone agrees with that, but that's the claim. Could the machloket of the role of women be based on the machloket as to whether we should ever follow the Zohar? I don't think so in this instance. I think in this instance, it's specific. The Zohar thing is really about a woman reading for herself. And it's really a pretty dramatic, claim to make that a woman could not read for herself if she actually were literate and able to read well. And for that reason, it really gets questioned. The Gra apparently reads the Zohar very differently from how Magen Avram does. And later authorities question his reading. Like I said, the Chai Adam, who even paskins that way, says, I'm not so sure about how Magen Avram is quoting the Zohar, but let's be careful for it nevertheless. So I don't think it's the core and essential thing. I think a good question to ask, though, is the Zohar somehow drawing on the same tradition that the Halachot Gedolot is drawing on? And that's possible. And that I can't really answer. You know, is there some earlier, you know, oral Torah that really the thing for women to do is to hear it from a man reading? That gets back to the question we asked when we learned the Yerushalmi. When the Yerushalmi talks about reading it for Rav Yehoshua ben Levi going to read it for his household, and when it talks about a man must read Megillah for the members of his household, did it mean like they really have to hear it from a man, or was it just saying that's to make sure they do it because generally speaking women weren't reading, and we don't know. Are we obligated to hear Megillah both in the evening and in the morning? Absolutely. And not only that, we talked about it a little last week, but not only are we obligated to hear it both morning and evening, but the a lot of times people make it to the night reading and they don't make it to the morning reading. And actually, according to Ashkenazi rulings, the morning reading is even more critical than the night reading. So it's kind of a funny thing that's hard to keep track of. Those shitot, such as Rashi and Rambam, that hold that women are equally obligated as men to read the Megillah, do they hold that a female soferet might write a Megillah? That is a fantastic question. There is discussion about this. I haven't looked into it deeply enough to answer your question, but I know that this is a real halachic discussion. And it's one of the questions is, even if you don't hold like them, what if, you know, for example, could a soferet write a Megillah for women to use? Would also be a question, right? Even if you don't follow Rashi and Rambam. Bli neder, this is something that I will learn properly and once I have update you on. Interestingly, all five Megillot have a very strong nexus with women. Yeah, I think about that a lot also. It's fascinating. Every single one of them, Kohelet maybe a little bit less, but Ruth certainly, women are central to the story. In Eicha, a lot of the imagery is the daughter of Jerusalem, the widow, right? Yirmiyahu is, to illustrate the emotions of mourning, Yirmiyahu is putting himself into the shoes of a woman, figuratively. Shir HaShirim is about, it's about a couple, but the woman's very central in the couple. And Esther, absolutely. Kohelet, I think not as much so, unless it's something you're gonna clue me in on. There's some psukim about women in Kohelet. I don't know if I like all of them. Rav Liebtag spoke about Amalek as a type, not an ethnic group. Yeah. Yeah. So it would be a similar idea, exactly how we would define Amalek. It's a little, they're a little slippery. We don't know 100% what they were, but it seems not to be the case. That's just one very small, clearly defined thing. Baruch Shepetarani is another example of relatively new and post-Talmudic bracha. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I brought you the Sitz Eliezer. With those who say a family could join for Zimun, also say a wife could read for husband. So that would, again, it gets back to the question, is the reason you think that a woman, for those who think that a woman should not be reading for a man, which is a lot. Oh, thank you. Okay. An article about the attitude towards women in Kohelet. I hope to have a chance to read it. Thank you so much. For those who think that, and it's many, many, many positions who think that a woman can't discharge a man's obligation in Megillah, if it's based on an understanding that the levels of obligation are different, then it doesn't matter, right? The analogy to Zimun is irrelevant. If it's based on an understanding that levels of obligation are the same, but that what it depends on is some ancillary issues, then it depends on what the ancillary issues are. If the ancillary issue is a general tzniut concern, and maybe that's what zila milta means, then maybe you could talk about it within a family, though I haven't seen that done. But if we're talking about something else, then it's less clear. Even kol isha in a ritual context, so there's a big discussion about whether kol isha applies in a ritual context to start with, but if it does, and also whether it would apply to cantillations. But if it does, it wouldn't distinguish between, let's say, a woman's husband and another man. So there are like, and for example, the Ran, who says that he's not necessarily convinced by the Halacha Gedolot, but he wants to be stringent for the Halacha Gedolot. So the bottom line is, out of the positions that say the woman shouldn't discharge a man's obligation, there are a fair number of them where the fact that it's within the family or out of the family wouldn't really make a difference. That being said, like we said, there might be some shad hadchak situations that might arise in a family which would necessitate a woman reading it for the family. And we saw the Yalkut Yosef backing that up, and Rav Avad Yosef actually says straight out he thinks a woman can discharge a man's obligation. Okay, the name of Kohelet is feminine. I love that. Tov, thank you very much, everyone. I enjoy your presence, and I always enjoy your questions. And I look forward to picking it up, Bezrat Hashem, starting to talk about Pesach next time we meet. In the interim, please have a Purim Sameach. Be well, be healthy, and may it be full of Ora V'Simcha. Bye-bye.